My friends at MyPillow, my buddy Mike Lindell, told me he was coming out with a brand new product. It's called the new mattress topper. So I got the new mattress topper immediately, and I've been sleeping on it now for a couple of months. It's the best thing you've ever felt in your life. Now, you literally have MyPillow foam for support. It's a transitional foam that helps relieve pressure points, and it's ultra-soft, patented temperature-regulating cover. And I got to tell you, it has a 10-year warranty, a cover that's washable and dryable. It's made in the USA, backed by their 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Once you try this new mattress topper, you put it right over your mattress, you will never sleep better. And right now, you, my radio listeners, you're going to save 30% off when you go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code TOPPER. And by the way, Mike will also give you two standard MyPillows absolutely free. All right, so try MyPillow.com, promo code TOPPER, promo code TOPPER for this great deal and the best night's sleep you ever had. Hey, it's that time of year for those of you, God forbid, you got to keep your New Year's resolution. What if you're a timeshare owner and you want to get out of your timeshare? Maybe that's at the top of your list, or maybe you made a bad investment over the years. It doesn't matter. Let not your heart be troubled, because the new year is also a reminder that you can get serious about getting rid of this timeshare and doing it right and doing it legally. And Lone Star Transfer is absolutely an amazing group of people. From beginning to end, I highly recommend, if you have any type of timeshare, I want you to contact Lone Star and tell them I told you to call. They'll give you a free, no obligation consultation, and they'll help get you out of your timeshare. They'll do it the right way, the legal way, and it will take very little effort on your part, just by calling pound 250 on your mobile phone and saying the keyword timeshare. That's pound 250 on your cell phone, keyword timeshare. You can check them out online at lonestartransfer.com.
You have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from iHeart Media.
All right, happy Friday. We're glad you're with us. A lot of ground to cover today. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. How many times has the news media in this country now, in the last 2 years, gone absolutely crazy, hysterical, and insane? We got them. We got them. Well, it's happening again today. I will tell you this. What a remarkable week this has been in so many different ways in terms of the exposure of the deep state. And are they connected? I'll let you decide on your own if they are or not. But, you know, what did we learn this week? We learned that we have the FBI director at the time, James Comey. We learned in the last 2 weeks, we learned that the second that he's fired, that a group of the upper echelon, upper class of the FBI, not rank and files, special agents, field agents that do a great job every day, but the upper echelon, it's always the same characters, same names. They keep running into each other all throughout all of these different issues that we have been discussing now for, in some way, shape, manner, or form, 2 years, especially Russia, Russia, Russia. And we now find, we see first that his Deputy Director Andrew McCabe is now under a official criminal investigation. We learned this week that his general counsel is under a criminal investigation. We learned that when Comey was fired, that out of whole cloth, these agents and top DOJ officials, remember, we have over 25 of them that have been fired, demoted, resigned in disgrace. And we have barely touched the surface. We now with a new attorney general, now with the inspector general still out in the field, Michael Horowitz, looking into FISA abuses. You know, we've learned an awful lot this week. And then we got the big bombshell of the week. And the bombshell is that, oh, wait a minute. Bruce Orr warned everybody that what became the bulk of information for the FISA applications, that he warned everybody in the upper echelon in the FBI that this was a political document paid for by Hillary Clinton, put together by a Trump hater, Christopher Steele, paid for again by Hillary, and that it is questionable at best, not verified, not corroborated. He said this to them in August. And then they still knowingly present, they downplayed Hillary, didn't mention that Hillary bought and paid for these phony Russian, the irony here, phony Russian lies. They didn't tell the FISA judges in the FISA application. That's fraud, conscious fraud committed against the court. But more importantly, they had all been warned that this was a political document, dubious at best, since debunked in many ways. Interestingly, BuzzFeed had first printed a lot of the dossier. When you read it, you laugh at it, actually. And it's so outrageous in its content, but it became the bulk of information, according to Nunes and the Grassley Graham memos, when the investigations have been ongoing. And then months even after they've been warned, they still never verified it. They never corroborated it. This is Jim Comey's FBI. Jim Comey signed that first FISA warrant application to the best of his ability. He's signing as a career law enforcement official, the top FBI director, Mr. Integrity, Mr. Character himself. He's signing that this is verified, accurate, and true. And then in January, he even tells then-President-elect Trump, well, it's salacious and it's unverified.
I was speaking to him and briefing him about some salacious and unverified material. It was in the context of that he had a strong and defensive reaction about that not being true. And my reading of it was important for me to assure him we were not personally investigating him.
Oh, that we're not personally investigating. But he had already signed the FISA warrant. Carter Page, Trump campaign associate. And that is the big, big, big news of the week here. Because what it means, if the law is followed, that means that anybody that never verified, corroborated, and was warned it's a political document that Hillary paid for it and signed off on not telling the FISA court in their FISA applications, the judges this as they're applying for the warrant, and that's somebody's constitutional rights, and they didn't tell them that it's not verified or corroborated just to get it, then that is all of those people would be subject to serious felony fraud against the FISA court judges in every instance. Now, why would it surprise you when we know it's the same people that exonerated Hillary without the investigation? Now, as I'm watching media today and the hysteria breakout about this BuzzFeed report, and we'll get to that in a second here, while I'm watching this, I'm thinking, kind of laughing a little bit to myself, because, well, and one other key thing we learned this week, I got to get this out too. We know also the key Justice Department officials, including Andrew Weissman, that's Mueller's pit bull, that they knew about the dossier being Russia information. Now remember, it's supposed to be about Russian influence in the 2016 election. And they knew in August of 2016, and that at some point, Andrew Weissman, the number one guy under Mueller with the worst track record, which to me always said that this is a witch hunt because of, you know, only Democrats, and even Hillary Clinton's attorney is hired to be part of Mueller's group, and Strzok and Page are part of Mueller's group, and Strzok and Page, when they're exposed as being huge Trump haters, Mueller gets rid of them quietly and takes their phones and zaps them clean, which never should have been done. But even they knew about Russian interference. Remember, that information bought and paid for in that dossier was released to the American people and leaked in many, many different forms. Well, why was the information leaked? To damage Donald Trump and help elect Hillary. The same people that exonerated Hillary, at least one of them, writing the exoneration in May, interviewing her in July, is Peter Strzok, saying that Hillary should win 100 million to zero. And then launching immediately thereafter the Trump-Russia investigation. But yet being warned, according to the testimony we released this week, that Bruce Orr said, nah, you can't trust this at all. But then you have it gets worse. Not only did Mueller and Mueller's team never investigate this aspect of the Russian influence in the election, you know, we now find out that Bruce Orr was the conduit for Christopher Steele. Christopher Steele's fired for lying and leaking. And Christopher Steele is still in touch with the fourth highest ranking member of the Justice Department. And he's feeding him information saying, hey, did you get it over to Mueller and Mueller's team yet? Have you heard back from them? And then after firing a Comey out of whole cloth, they sit around and say, well, I wonder if Vladimir Putin somehow told Trump to fire Comey with no evidence, no probable cause, nothing. A conspiracy built out of nothing. And that's what we've learned this week. That is the deep state. And I'm telling you, if the attorney general, the new attorney general, William Barr, does his job, if Horowitz, the inspector general, does his job, their job is to follow the law, apply the law equally to everybody, not play politics, equal justice under the law, equal application of our laws. If there was fairness in the Mueller investigation, they would have been all over. Why did Hillary pay for these Russian lies? Why were they disseminated to the American people before an election? How were they possibly used to obtain a warrant, a FISA warrant, the most difficult to get, based on a dossier that everybody knew was hers and Russian and never verified? He would have gotten into all of these issues, but he didn't. But Mueller's team knew about the dossier, knew the author of the dossier, knew the guy was fired, knew the guy had an anti-Trump bias, knew that Hillary paid for it, and didn't do a thing, didn't lift a finger. If that doesn't show you in any way, they didn't care about Russia collusion at all. It's all because you've got this team that exonerated Hillary when she should have been indicted. You know, when do, you know, the big talking point of all Democrats today is, oh, this could be obstruction of justice. Michael Cohen is now saying Donald Trump directed him, told him, you know, to lie about the contacts about Trump Tower in Russia. Now, in other words, to say it didn't, that the discussions ended in January 2016, when in reality they ended in June of 2016. That's what the contact is. And somehow, you know, that the president directly, Michael's saying that the president directly told him to suborn perjury and say that it really ended in January and not June, when in reality it ended. And I'm thinking, I'm watching the Democratic Party. They hated Michael Cohen. Now they love him because he seems to be on their political side, and they're you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And I'm thinking, as I'm listening to this, you know, Michael Cohen is sadly, because I knew the guy and I knew his family, going to jail for lying to Congress, lying on loan applications, and not paying his taxes. And so, and then I'm watching Democrats. It's laughable. At the end of this week, with all these huge deep state developments, Democrats in Congress, their hysteria again, this is for the 900th time, you know, about President Trump based on the claims of Michael Cohen. Now, Michael Cohen does, and I would not recommend it for him. It's up to him. He goes before Congress, and Jim Jordan is going to question him, and all these other Republicans are going to question him, and they're going to say, which Michael Cohen should we believe? Now, I can dismantle the credibility of all this in about 30 seconds, but if you assume for the moment that even BuzzFeed nailed this story down, although reporters of the story are giving out conflicting stories about whether they've seen the information or not. You know, two law enforcement officials, they say, confirmed it. Obviously, this is a special counsel leak. But Robert Mueller now has, what, a serious, verifiable evidence that Donald Trump ordered Michael Cohen to lie to Congress, which our Democratic friends insist is an unbelievable case of obstruction of justice. You know, because the first question has to be, since when has Democrats started caring about obstruction? Because the biggest slam dunk case of obstruction of justice, if we have equal justice and equal application of our laws, is Hillary Clinton subpoenaed emails. And then, of course, the deletions, the bleach bit, the hammers, or Bill Clinton literally had Monica Lewinsky signing a false affidavit before pressuring, you know, Betty Curry, his secretary at the time, to lie to the FBI. Never mind that he later perjured himself during grand jury testimony. So Democrats now all of a sudden, and their media cohorts, they're tight at the hip. You know, did they support Clinton's impeachment? Of course not. They trash Republicans who tried to hold Clinton accountable for his one-man crime wave. Hillary Clinton ordered the deletion of subpoenaed emails. It happened. Those were her emails. If you delete, if you bleach bit, you destroy your devices that are subpoenaed, it's never going to work out well for you. And if you pay for a Russian dossier that, and then it gets spread to the American people before an election, and it's not verified or corroborated, and they know Hillary paid for it, and they present it to a court falsely committing a fraud, that's not going to work out well for you. And that's what's so fascinating about watching what I call the biggest information crisis in the country's history. You know, journalism is dead. This is all agenda driven. And it's going to be another debunked story by sometime next week, as it usually is. Hey, if you're one of 34 million Americans that smokes, you know what a hassle it can be. For me, I'm out playing golf and I come back smelling like cigars. It's the smell on your hands and your breath, your clothes. But now, thanks to Juul, you don't have to worry about it anymore. Juul is a vaporizer. It does contain nicotine for a satisfying transition. Now, when I found Juul, it was a complete game changer in my life. I don't smoke any cigars any longer, and Juul was designed by smokers for smokers to be an alternative to whatever it is you're smoking. So if you're one of 34 million adults who do smoke, cigars, cigarettes, pipe, whatever, well, there is an alternative to all of them. Now, to discover the smoking alternative that's like nothing you've ever tried, just visit juul.com/switchamerica. That's juul.com/switchamerica. Now, warning, this product does contain nicotine, and nicotine is addictive. You know, the media has gotten so much wrong from the get-go. There are two ways that you have this media bias. I mean, we know the Democratic Party's tied at the hip. I mean, we saw it last week in all of its glory with manufactured crisis. The same terms the Democrats use, same word the media uses. And you see it on almost every issue here. You know, I remember that the weeks after the Guardian's viral blockbuster of the Assange Manafort scoop, yeah, that didn't turn out to be true. Or Michael Cohen, you know, was in Prague. That was, and Mueller knows everything. Yeah, that didn't turn out to be true. CNN, literally, they kind of stepped on it with Donald Trump Jr. and the WikiLeaks story and, you know, three journalists leaving CNN after a retracted article. And, you know, there's just example after example of this. The Washington Examiner actually put a piece out that describes it, and I'll go into some detail in this, mainstream media errors in the Trump era. And they have chronicled all of it. And yet it doesn't matter. They just keep reporting it, and then they never get held accountable for it. And it's a good, what they're doing is they're building up this big, huge, massive anticipation of the, quote, resistance and the hate Trump crowd that they're going to impeach this guy any second. And we've been to this point so many different times only to be proven wrong. Now, the two reporters from BuzzFeed that worked on this particular piece, I have nothing against either one of them. I don't even have a problem that they printed the dossier. I actually think it was hilarious and informative. But one says they saw the information. The other said they didn't. They're contradicting themselves. And it's just, at this point, you got to ask, which side of Michael Cohen are you going to believe in this story? All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. So I have from the Washington Examiner, I wish I could count the pages printed out. It's like a mini book. And this was written back. Linda, if you can go back and find this, it was in the Washington Examiner, Beckett Adams, February 9th, 2017. Mainstream media errors in the Trump era. Your catalog of the media's bias-fueled failure fest in 2017. We don't even include 2018 in this. Now, you have every reason to be dubious here. You know, one of the things, is, and I read this closely, I take every, you know, report seriously, and these reporters, you know, are standing by. You have, you know, the media racing to hype this bombshell claiming that Robert Mueller, by the way, who leaked this? Who could have possibly leaked this? You always ask, who benefits from a leak like this? Well, I just went through how hard a week it was for the deep state and how they all were told in advance that Clinton paid for the dossier and how that it was dubious and that Michael Steele hated Trump and et cetera, et cetera. And then we have James Baker, we now know is under criminal investigation. Under Comey, he was the general counsel of the FBI, and that's on top of the deputy FBI director, Andrew McCabe. And then, of course, you know, we've got all this new information. It means that everybody that signed on to the FISA warrant that never verified or corroborated it and never listened to Bruce Orr's admonition that he said he gave under sworn testimony before Congress just released yesterday. That's a problem for all of them. That's a legal problem because that means they're signing on to literally that's a conscious conspiracy to commit fraud on a court. And in this case, using Russian influence paid for by Clinton. But putting all that aside, because the media has never shown any interest in reporting the abuse of power and the corruption in the deep state and what has been a never-ending attempt to influence the 2016 election. Number one, by saving Hillary Clinton from what would be, again, if we're talking about obstruction, which the media is going crazy about today. They don't care about the subpoenaed emails deleted. They don't care that the hard drives were acid washed with bleach bit. They don't care that the devices were destroyed with hammers and SIM cards removed. They don't even seem to care that Mueller knew about all of this while he's investigating Russia and did nothing on any of it, which shows a bias. Linda is talking in my ear. What did you say it on air? What do you want to say?
42 pages.
Mine didn't count. I don't know why.
It's 42 pages of mainstream media errors in the Trump era, catalog of the media's best bias-fueled failure fest in 2017.
And what's so amazing about this, and it goes through, this is just 1 year's worth, not even counting the election year. You know, remember, you save one candidate, and you say that candidate, the one candidate that you hate is just despicable, call him every name in the book. You're the main guy in interviewing Flynn. You're the main guy writing the exoneration of Hillary, you know, along with Comey. You're the main guy that then begins the Russia witch hunt. You then hired along with all the other Trump haters of Mueller's team. And you have to leave when the inspector general finds the text messages with you and your girlfriend that just showed nothing but dripping hatred of Trump. The media runs with all of it. They never seem to care that she committed crimes. She was given a special dispensation to continue in the campaign because she was the candidate that should win $100 million to zero. You try any of the things Hillary did and you are going to jail. And I do believe if any of you committed fraud and conspiracy to commit fraud against FISA courts to obtain warrants and you purposely put forward false information that you were told, now we know this week was false, I don't think that's going to work out well for most Americans. So it's under, you know, this is not in a vacuum that this story comes out this week, in my opinion. I don't believe in a whole lot of coincidences here. But so the media is now off the rails again. And so they got two reporters of the BuzzFeed report and they announced this big bombshell in a TV interview. And one of the reporters said he hadn't actually examined any evidence that he claimed backed up his report. They cite two sources, you know, police sources. To me, that would have to be somebody associated with the special counsel's office. It's the only place it could come from. And when the BuzzFeed reporter, the one of them, was forced to admit that his co-author on the piece has been accused of making up sources and he has a history of reporting bombshell stories that later turned out to be false, why would the editors run with that story if one of the reporters is saying they never saw the evidence? You just have two unidentified police people that are the sources of this. And so anyway, on CNN's New Day this morning, one of the authors of the piece, Anthony Cormier, you know, revealed that he had not seen the evidence underlying the report.
Your reporting has obviously captured much of the country this morning. It's on every network. So can you tell us, Anthony, the evidence I know that in the report you say that you have spoken, you have two law enforcement sources who tell you that they have seen evidence, texts, emails, a cache of other documents, maybe transcripts with other witnesses in Trump Organization that Donald Trump pressured Michael Cohen to lie. He suborned perjury. Have you seen any of that other corroborating evidence?
No, I've not seen it personally, but the folks that we've talked to, the two officials that we've spoken to, are fully 100% read in to that aspect of the special counsel's investigation.
Okay, and, you know, now Rudy Giuliani said any suggestion from any source that the president counseled Michael Cohen to lie is categorically false. Michael is a convicted criminal and liar. To quote the prosecutors, he's traded on a pattern of lies and dishonesty over an extended period of time. And for that, he is going to pay a very, very serious price. Today's claims are just more made-up lies born of Michael Cohen's malice and desperation in an effort to reduce his sentence, which I don't want to get into any. I don't want to get sidebarred here. And I'm just looking at, well, what did the piece in particular say? Well, it says, well, also people within the Trump Organization, et cetera, et cetera. But you don't get names, you don't get documents, you don't get any of these things. So he's admitting that he hadn't seen it, and then that admission that he doesn't see any evidence of the emails and texts and, you know, that are in question here that supposedly would corroborate this. To Allison Camerota's credit, she followed up with a question of the dubious past of his co-author, who came under scrutiny for falsely reporting in Salon in 2002, which led to the article getting removed that Karl Rove had been indicted when he had not. And he was in trouble, as Camerota said, for perhaps claiming to have sources that he really didn't have. His stories didn't wash. And executive directors and editors have had to apologize after some of his big blockbuster stories. Look, there's a whole, I don't know the guy. I don't have any beef against him. I'm looking more at the bigger picture here, which is a news media that does something that has now become a daily basis. They get hysterical. They got him. We got him. Because this is all they care about. This is why I say every second, every minute, every hour of every day. And then when you look at the 42 pages and, you know, all the times they have gone nuts and then it gets wrong. You know, they once claimed CNN that Republicans funded the Trump dossier. And, well, it was actually a GOP donor. Paul Singer contracted Fusion GPS. But remember, that was taken over then also later by the Democrats. Or a judge dismissed a suit accusing Trump of profiting through his office, ruling that the president had not violated, you know, a clause in the Constitution. The New York Times got that wrong. I mean, I can now read 42 pages of all of this, and they never get held responsible for being wrong. They just move on to the next hysterical, hopeful report that they're going to believe whole cloth. Now, there's two ways you have media bias. One is, you know, the stories you choose to cover and then what you choose not to cover. And every now major newspaper in the country, in spite of, you know, in 1 year alone, 42 printed pages of falsehoods about Donald Trump. 42 of them. We've been down this road of hysteria so many times. And they're creating this false hope that he's going to be impeached. You know, Jonathan Carl says, you know, his sources at the special counsel say it's going to be anticlimactic. I have no idea. My feeling has always been if you appoint Andrew Weissman with his horrific track record, only Democratic donors, Strzok and Page included, get rid of their phones and wipe them clean. And then you have appoint somebody like Jeannie Ray, who was a lawyer for the Clinton Foundation. They're just going to try and write the worst report they possibly can. But there's been no evidence of Trump-Russia collusion. What they're saying here is, well, he might have told Michael Cohen to lie. Okay. And, you know, Michael's run into problems because of this very issue. Sadly for him and sadly for his family. And but when you have the BuzzFeed reporter literally dismantling his own so-called anti-Trump bombshell, you got to pay attention to that. And that certainly slows things down for everybody, or it certainly should if they had a commitment to what is the truth and accuracy in reporting. Now, the same people have ignored the big bombshells this week that are provable. We have sworn testimony, the actual words of Bruce Ohr and the people at the higher levels of the FBI and the Department of Justice that he warned, including, by the way, this got right into Mueller's office, who Christopher Steele was, what a big Trump hater he was, who paid for the dossier, and that they should be dubious and not trust anything in it. And then in spite of all of that, the FBI still never verified or corroborated it. They just took it. They ran with it. As Andrew McCabe once said, there'd be no FISA application without the dossier. So they needed it to get it from the FISA court. They ignored that Hillary was the person that paid for this. They ignored Steele's strong anti-Trump bias. It was put together, the investigations, all by anti-Trump people. And they present it to the court as though it's actually real, accurate, and true. And it's not. Now, that's a problem. That's journalism dead 101 in America. Because what they choose to cover and what they choose not to cover. And the fact that you have such a massive abuse of power that was used directly to save a presidential candidate of choice so she can continue her campaign and actively turn on the other candidate using false information, knowingly false, getting warrants to spy on campaign associates, putting in place insurance policies and media leak strategies. Now, if the media had any semblance of fairness or desire for truth, they would have gotten to all of this. You can't claim today, you can't ignore the emails, subpoenaed, deleted, bleach bit hammers, and then say with a straight face they actually care about obstruction of justice. And that's what's going on in the media today. And it is this hyper partisan. This is what I've been calling it from the beginning. This is what Hannity Watch is about. Hannity Watch on the media, they hate the president seconds, every second, minute, hour of every day. And it never stops. And then you got the Democratic Party, same thing. You have a few powerful people. By the way, the people most disgusted are the field agents, special agents for the FBI. They're disgusted because they know that this is wrong, what's happened here. And unfortunately, this is an organization they're proud to work for, as they should be. But it was an abuse of power at the highest levels. And, you know, if there is a smoking gun email, Donald Trump does an email. If there's a smoking gun text that says or how do you prove if he doesn't text or email, regardless of what you have, unless you heard the conversation and you're willing to testify in court that the president says to Michael Cohen, I want you to lie and say that, no, we finished the Trump-Moscow project in January of 2016, not June in 2016. What would be the difference anyway? And by the way, it's been well documented about the entire Trump Tower project, well, the flirtation, if you will, that was happening. They hid these stories. All right, we got a lot to get to today. We'll talk more about this. We also have a Democratic Party now tied to radical extremism, and it is the worst that it has ever been. We'll get to that. Who's in charge of the Women's March? We'll get to that story and the Nancy Pelosi aspects that continue to fall out from the president saying, no, not during a shutdown. We can't afford you going. He also pulled out of Davos so he could be home and hopefully get the monies to secure our borders and good for the country and keep us safe. But Democrats are too busy trying to destroy the president. All right, a lot coming up. So these organizers of this Women's March, you're going to be blown away by all of this. We're also going to get into Nancy Pelosi and the trip canceled. He told the world where I'm going. No, he actually told the world where we're not going. Where she's not going, that it was on the trip with the taxpayer dime. All right, that's all coming up. We'll have a busy Friday edition. Stay with us. Details you won't get anywhere else. Hannity Watch continues.
It's using the U.S. military to get revenge on the Speaker of the House.
Well, our nation's capital has officially become a playground, Brooke. The president has responded in sort of a childish way is the only way to describe it.
The only phrase that comes to mind is nanny, nanny, boo, boo.
Right. Sandbox? Get out of the sandbox? There's always a Russia threat to pull. She was also going to stop by NATO.
Yeah.
So that visit also off.
The move seen in some quarters as an effort to try to divert attention from the Russia investigation.
This is not disconnected from the Russian story. The goal of the Russians, if you read Malcolm Nance's book, The Plot to Destroy Democracy, their goal was to destabilize the West and to sow chaos in the American government. Anybody watching TV would agree that that is exactly what's happening.
If you ever had any doubts whatsoever that the Democratic Party and the media are tied at the hip, I mean, it all goes to manufactured crisis, a media meltdown over what was the epic play of the year when Donald Trump said, well, you know, due to the shutdown, you know, I don't think it's appropriate to be spending these funds on going on the trip. And of course, Nancy Pelosi's reaction to it is even better. Due to the shutdown, I am sorry to inform you that your trip to Brussels and Egypt and Afghanistan has been postponed. We will reschedule this 7-day excursion when the shutdown is over. Now, in light of the 800,000 great American workers not receiving pay, I'm sure you would agree that postponing this public relations event is totally appropriate. I also feel that during this period, well, it would be better if you were in Washington negotiating with me and joining the stronger border security movement to end the shutdown. Obviously, if you would like to make your journey flying commercial, that would certainly be your prerogative. I look forward to seeing you soon. Even more forward to watching our open and dangerous southern border finally receive the attention, the funding, and security it so desperately deserves. Here's what we have seen. We have now watched, as we are in day 28 of the government shutdown, that 98% of you don't know or notice in any aspect of your life. And what we have witnessed is every Democrat go on vacation while the president waited to negotiate. We have watched every single day, almost every day, the president inviting Democrats to come to the White House to negotiate. We have watched a weekend where the president offered the vice president for negotiations and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer send low-ranking aides to the meeting. We have watched 10 days into this new Congress, all these Democrats at a luxurious Puerto Rico resort, sunning and dining and wining and dining, private jets, etc., in spite of global warming, lobbyists paying for everything. We have now watched Nancy would go away the next 7 days and the furloughed employees would have no shot of getting their second paycheck. All throughout the process, including this week, including today, they are invited to go to the White House and negotiate. The president sees this as, well, this is where 90% of our heroin comes from into this country. We have homicides. We have assaults. We have sexual assaults. He's given the numbers and the statistics. There's always the danger that a terrorist can come across the border, although probably 98% of the people that come into this country illegally are good people that want a better life for their kids and grandkids. They're just not respecting our laws, our constitution, our borders and sovereignty. And that's where it is. And the president seems content, and I think he should be, in letting this play out. Because it's about life and death, and it's about the high ground. Anyway, joining us now, Dan Bongino, former NYPD officer, Secret Service agent, author of the bestseller called Spygate, Jonathan Gillum, former FBI agent, Federal Air Marshal, author of the bestseller Sheep No More. Thank you both for being with us. You know, Dan, I last night I took a slight disagreement with you because, and I really didn't. I think we were in full agreement when you said, you know, it's always in Washington a race to the bottom. And I said, I actually think this is the high ground standing up to stop the drugs, the drug traffickers, the drug trafficking, human trafficking, etc.
Yeah, Sean, I should have made a finer distinction. You're right. On the moral, ethical, and legislative front, there's no question Donald Trump is doing the right thing. None amongst reasonable people. A border wall is necessary. A wall is necessary to keep people here from entering illegally, not legally. That is a clear case. The problem is, and I think where I kind of may have talked past you a little bit, was what I'm talking about is pure political tactics right now. The idea that we were somehow going to have a Tip O'Neill, Ronald Reagan, you know, beer after hours discussing tax cuts, Sean, I think you and I can both acknowledge those days are over. I said last night, Robert's rules of order are dead. I think Donald Trump finally realizes that this is now a political street fight. And this political street fight is going to require him at some point to take the gloves off, which he did yesterday. And I think we need to get behind him. But you're absolutely correct. I'm not suggesting that we should forfeit the moral high ground on issues. We're already there. I'm just suggesting that this is a street fight now. And I guess a good analogy would be we're in a ring with a guy wearing no boxing gloves and carrying razor blades while we're wearing 20-ounce gloves and we're looking to the ref for help. You can either fight back or you're going to get smoked. And it's Donald Trump understands he has to fight back.
And that's what everybody wants him to do. I mean, this is what he ran on. This is what he won on. This is what he promised. Fighting, I don't think you'll lose in the end politically, regardless of what polls may go up or down at any given moment, Jonathan Gillum. I don't think you lose politically when you fight to keep your promises. It's when you capitulate. It's when you cave. It's when you back up. It's when you, and by the way, that doesn't exclude compromise. You know, the art of the deal is what was also one of the president's biggest selling points.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because the reality is the majority of compromises that happen in modern day politics are not compromises at all. They don't get anything done. You know, when Chuck Schumer was in the White House, that magical day when President Trump said he would own this, which is what a leader does, Chuck Schumer said, "We have a bill that will pass Congress and the Senate." Well, yeah, it'll pass, but it's not going to get anything done. And that's the way politics work. And I'll tell you, you're exactly right. This is what got the president elected. I want him to build the wall, but ultimately I want him to fight. And what he's doing is he's removing the pomp and circumstance that goes in the aura and the illusion that these people are the higher upper crest. He's removing that, and he's crushing them because of the things that they've done. I can't think of in our lifetime, besides Ronald Reagan, and it was a different time then, I can't think of a leader that has shown more skills in handling people that are ruining America than Donald Trump is doing today.
Well, I mean, but look at what they want to destroy this man on an hourly basis. I mean, you know, I'm watching this whole thing with BuzzFeed, and I went through all of the content of this earlier. You know, since when do Democrats ever care about obstruction of justice? They didn't ever care. You know, we have Eric Holder. Well, if this is true, what Michael Cohen is saying and what BuzzFeed is reporting, BuzzFeed said they didn't see any of the evidence. Obviously, a leak from Mueller's office. But we know that, you know, Eric Holder lied to Congress. They hated Michael Cohen. You know, Michael Cohen, you know, admitted to lying to Congress, lying on a loan application and on tax issues. And now he's the left's best friend. What do you make of that, Dan Bongino?
Well, I think, Sean, that this BuzzFeed leak, where, keep in mind, as you just accurately stated, the author of the piece himself has said, well, I really haven't seen any evidence, obviously should be taken with, forget about a grain of salt, should be taken with a boulder of salt. But don't you find the timing of this leak, Sean, awfully coincidental? We just had a major bombshell on your Fox show by John Solomon this week. I mean, a nuclear explosive goes off where Solomon gets the transcripts of the Orr testimony, and we find out that Andrew Weissman, the lead pit bull for Mueller investigating Trump, knew about the dossier in August or the origins of the dossier before they went to the FISA court. In other words, the guy investigating Trump now knew this was a political hit the whole time. This comes out on your show with Solomon. And next thing you know, BuzzFeed, oh, look, looky here, folks. Look what we got pulling out of a hat, a magic rabbit. We've got this story about BuzzFeed. This happens every time with Mueller. You see a major Moab launched on your show or somewhere else. And next thing you know, days later, is another unsourced anonymous leak that comes out painting Trump in an awful light. Very, very suspicious time.
You know, you look at the whole thing. It's just they've fed this whole narrative. Now, not only did we have that revelation, now we've got all the people around Comey. We discovered this week James Baker is under criminal investigation, Jonathan, on top of Andrew McCabe. Baker was Comey's general counsel. Andrew McCabe, the deputy FBI director at the time. You have this whole FISA abuse issue being investigated ever so slowly by the inspector general. But we learned a lot about FISA this week, didn't we? That everybody was told ahead of time that they shouldn't trust the document. Everyone was briefed on it, including people in Robert Mueller's office. We also know that Christopher Steele was trying to feed Bruce Orr information to send to Robert Mueller, but he was fired for lying and leaking. You know, you couldn't even make up a novel this insane.
No, and I don't know of any other case, and Dan can back me up on this. I don't know of any other case that once the major part of evidence that spurned the case and got the case going
was found out to have been created by the people who are bringing the allegations with right. fake, no case would have gone forward at that point. It would have stopped immediately.
Well, but the thing is, but it does lead to Russia collusion. It leads to Russian influence on our elections, but Hillary paid for it.
Yeah, but that's but this was so crazy. You know, the government and the officials in the government, it doesn't matter if you're Congress or if you're the president, you're going to talk to foreign nationals. That's why they have State Department. That's why they have ambassadors. And that's what happened. And the thing is, what made, and I know everybody's talked about this, but what made this whole thing go forward was the fake dossier allowed to get allowed them to get a FISA, which allowed them to do listening and set up sources. And so the whole thing, they could have just simply said to the Russian guy, hey, go meet with this guy, record it, and then make a big deal about it. I mean, it's some of these meetings aren't even in secret. They're just meeting with these people. And they can record it or have a source there and say, well, you know, Donald Trump Jr. met with this guy. Well, it was just a meeting for a campaign. It was nothing. But they can make it into something. That's the way. It's exactly like what you see on the media every day, Sean. It's just, this is politics, but it's really one and the same. They're just doing it to give evidence for the court of public opinion. And Mueller's doing it and using the same evidence for the for a real court that's going to go nowhere.
Where does this all, do you think, come to an end? Because I actually think now with the revelation this week that Bruce Orr told everybody that this was a political document. I still believe that if we had equal justice under the law, Dan Bongino, Hillary would be in trouble. You know, all of a sudden, they didn't care about the bleach bit. The subpoenaed emails deleted and all the devices busted. Yeah. They didn't care about that case of obstruction. They're trying to twist one together here that doesn't exist. But more importantly, now that we know that there was a massive and widespread lying and fraud committed to FISA courts when they knew from day one, and that Mueller totally ignored the Russian connection with Hillary, I don't know how that has credibility, except that the media hates Trump and they ignore anything that would be exculpatory that they say they care about.
Sean, I think the three-letter agency people are in a world of trouble here. FBI, the CIA folks, Brennan, I believe there's been a massive paper trail. And just let me show this to you. Dude, think about this one date. This is a pivotal date, July 27, 2017. A bunch of things happen on that date, right? Bob Mueller finds out in July 27, 2017 from IG Michael Horowitz that the Peter Stroke text, that they have them. In other words, the whole scheme's been exposed. Bob Mueller knows it, and the IG tells Bob Mueller they have the text. You know what happens on that same day? That James Baker story being under criminal investigation was broken a long time ago by John Solomon in an article at Circa. You know what also happens on that day, Sean? Papadopoulos is picked up at the airport, and the day before, Manafort's house is hit. What does that tell you? That tells you Mueller knows this whole thing is a scheme. The texts give the whole scheme up from Peter Stroke, and he's trying to shut everybody up by locking up Papadopoulos, Manafort, and they got afraid about that Baker story under criminal investigation all on the same day. You guys can look it up. July 27th, 2017, that's when the fuse was lit on this.
That's a great point. All right, Dan Bongino and Jonathan Gillum, 800-941-SEAN. All right, so for the president and the shutdown, when does this come to a head? Is it when they run out of money? You know, at some point, there's a lot of millions of Americans on food stamps. What do we do then? What do the Democrats do then? Will they accept an invitation at that point? Jonathan.
You know, I don't know how this is going to end, but I will tell you this, Sean. I think that the president right now has the ultimate, I don't like the word compromise, but he has the ultimate compromise that could put him in a position to show that either he owns this whole thing or that they are not going to do anything. And that is, if he allowed a contract with America for all the people, you know, they're saying it's like 20 million illegals now. We're never going to get all those people. And the contract would come with stipulations. You can never go on welfare. You can never have been in trouble. Other things, but if you sign this and you stay here for 5 or 10 years and you don't get in trouble, you pay taxes, then you can work towards American citizenship, but you can either not vote for 10 years or never vote at all.
Yeah, if last word, Dan.
That,
yeah, go ahead.
I'm hearing from a lot of my federal law enforcement buddies that the federal unions that represent these employees are infuriated, are furious right now for obvious reasons. Their members are missing paychecks. I'm hearing that after the third or potentially fourth check is missed, that they're going to push the Democrats and say, listen, it's time to get to the table and get this thing done. That's where I think it's going to change.
Unbelievable. All right. Thank you, Dan Bongino, Jonathan Gillum. When we come back, well, we have Kayleigh McEnany and Jeff Lord are going to join us as we talk about not only the women's protest march from coming up tomorrow in Washington, D.C., but a Democratic Party that now is rallying behind and failing to condemn, you know, what is raw anti-Semitism and racism. Where do you see the associations when we get back?
You know what's really pissing me off?
What? I've never heard you pissed off before.
No, you actually haven't. You've built 83 miles of protected bike lanes. I don't think you understand the impact of taking something like 10th Avenue, which is six lanes, down to 2.5, particularly when you have a winter storm and you can't move. None of that is movable, so you can't get the, nothing flows.
We're marching over to Mitch McConnell's office and show him what's up. Isn't that right?
That's right.
Right. Okay, guys. We went to Mitch McConnell's office, where we went to the Senate cloakroom. Where? Hashtag, where's Mitch? You can run, but you can't hide.
That's the new radicalism of the left-wing radical Democratic Party. We're going to get to that in our final hour free-for-all here. But what's going to be fascinating to watch is, so you got this women's march coming up on Saturday, and you look at the people that have put this thing together, people that we have talked about many times on the program before, and it's a pretty scary picture of radicalism that you wouldn't expect the DNC and the Democratic Party to be associating themselves with, you know, from Linda Sarsour, known anti-Semite, promoted Sharia law. You know, a woman that said that Ayan Hirsi Ali, remember we've interviewed her? Remember she sadly was a victim of female genital mutilation, and Sarsour goes on to say she doesn't deserve to be a woman and deserves to have her anatomy, female anatomy, taken away. And when she was accused of blatant anti-Semitism, quote, that's coming from the Jewish media. Or you got the organizers, which we'll get into in the next half hour, Tamika Mallory and a few others, founders of this women's march, you know, both fans of the bigoted anti-Semite and racist Louis Farrakhan. You know, and they're both praising him. One saying, Mallory saying that he's the greatest of all time on social media.
We did not make those remarks. You can't.
But you're associating with a man
and
who
so
does
what I will say to you is that I don't agree with many of Minister Farrakhan's statements.
That's specifically about Jewish people.
As I said, I don't agree with many of Minister Farrakhan's statements.
You condemn them?
I don't agree with these statements. At the end of the day,
you won't condemn it.
And you have this women's march this week, that's what people are going to be showing up to. You know, you've got a freshman congresswoman, Omar, known anti-Semite. You know, she's the one that cooked up the comments this week, false allegations out of whole cloth, a conspiracy against Lindsey Graham. You know, once calling Israel an apartheid state. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. And, of course, the media is not going to focus on this. They're just too busy talking about Trump. You know, whatever little nugget they get on any given day that they can run absolutely wild with. And as we discussed earlier, with absolutely no evidence whatsoever. It's like the media now, because Michael Cohen is a different story. He's like their best friend ever. And they never liked him. Anyway, joining us now, Kayleigh McEnany. He's the author of The New American Revolution, The Making of a Populist Movement. Jeff Lord back with us, former associate political director in the Reagan administration, columnist, author. New book coming out called The Swamp Wars, Donald Trump and the New American Populism versus the Old Order. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start with this crazy women's march and everybody that is associated with it. What are your thoughts, Kayleigh?
Yeah, it's incredible that Democrats have supported this, that they've rallied around this. Now, apparently, some Democrats are trying to distance themselves, and for good reason. Several of the co-chairs of the women's march, as you noted, have ties with Louis Farrakhan. And just to remind the audience, Louis Farrakhan is a despicable anti-Semite, a despicable racist who has called Adolf Hitler a very great man. Those were his words. That is a quote. And of course, Tamika Mallory, one of the co-chairs of this march, as you noted, called him the greatest of all time, has a picture with her arm around him, as do, by the way, I'd note, seven House Democrats who have close ties with Louis Farrakhan. President Barack Obama had a picture with him. These are despicable despicable ties.
No, they hid that picture for 8 years, and I'll play the story later, but Louis Farrakhan, in his own words, admitted that he and Obama had an agreement. It was basically like a conspiracy not to admit that they know each other and had pictures with each other and that they knowingly hid it. Why is it amazing when in Chicago he hung out with, let's see, Frank Marshall Davis Begins It All, an Acorn organizer, a community organizer, the Reverend Wright, Ayers and Dorn, unrepentant domestic terrorist. Why would any of that surprise anybody? I don't know. Jeffrey Lord, I mean, if it was Republicans, they'd be all over it. DNC was a sponsor. They pulled out, but they won't give a reason why they're pulling out.
Well, that's right. And Sean, when you pull back, this has been an increasing problem on the American left. I mean, you certainly remember the 2012 convention, Democratic convention, when they had to sort of ram through in an alleged voice vote, a resolution recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, something that had been in their platform forever. And there were all these objections to it. And certainly I've written in my book, In Swamp Wars, it's coming out, and you've identified Media Matters. I mean, they were publishing columns on the Israel lobby, quote unquote, and Israel firsters, etc. This is a serious problem on the American left. And the problem is the American media, which tries to cover for them. Not that they're necessarily anti-Semitic, but what they want to do is give them a pass because they want to try and protect them. And I think with this Women's March, we've started to reach a point where this is no longer something they can hide.
But remember, they didn't even care back in 2017 when they had the first Women's March, because that was the one Madonna's talking about blowing up the White House or dreaming an awful lot about it, you know, and Ashley Judd goes into her rant. And, you know, let's go back to 2017, because this is where it starts. So the fact that radicals are still running it, the Democratic Party doesn't condemn it, and now it's gotten into Congress, nobody condemns it. It just speaks volumes, and it also says and sends a message, you know, Nancy Pelosi can't do a deal. She's got to appeal to this growing radical left wing of her party, because the minute she deviates, she's going to lose her job.
And to our detractors that insist that this march will never add up to anything. F*** you. But this is the hallmark of revolution. Yes, I'm angry. Yes, I am outraged. Yes, I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
I am a nasty woman. I'm nasty, like my blood stains on my bed sheets. We don't actually choose if and when to have our periods. Believe me, if we could, some of us would. We don't like throwing away our favorite pairs of underpants. Tell me, why are tampons and pads still taxed when Viagra and Rogaine are not? Is your erection really more than protecting the sacred, messy part of my womanhood? Is the blood stain on my jeans more embarrassing than the thinning of your hair?
Kaylee, it just doesn't get any crazier than that.
Oh, it does not get any crazier. I mean, that kind of speaks for itself. And to think that there were young women in that crowd who saw that, what an embarrassment. And I can tell you this, the first generation of feminists who earned women the right to vote, who fought for that, who fought for equality in the workplace, they're rolling over in their graves right now hearing that kind of nonsense, that kind of crazy talk. That's embarrassing to my gender. It's embarrassing to the cause of pushing women
That's
forward.
It's not embarrassing to you. Why would that be embarrassing to your gender? These are individuals that have radical views, and you're not associated with them.
But they've taken the claim of the feminist mantle, though. They've taken the label of feminist and wrongfully so.
Yeah, Jeffrey?
Sean, I was there that day, and I didn't have to be on CNN for part of the time. So with a friend, I took a walk down through that gathering there, the Women's March. And you know exactly what I'm talking about, since you've been on television so much. I got recognized and I got yelled at. I mean, these people are, in fact, very angry. And my experience, and I think everybody's experience with the American left, is that's always the case. It could have been the nuclear freeze with Ronald Reagan. It doesn't really matter. It changes. Now, they may even be angrier now than they were before because they lost this election. But these are angry people. Madonna was at least right about that.
No, that I actually agree. Well, but this is the point now is the Democrats and the Democratic Party. And as we watch, for example, all during Christmas, the president, Kaylee, he stays back at the White House saying, all right, I want to negotiate a deal, but I don't want 90% of Americans' heroin coming in through our southern border. We see the statistics. Americans are getting killed. I've met too many angel moms and dads, so we want to end that problem. And then he's saying, you know, we also have a perilous journey for people on the other side of the wall if we get it built, and we can help protect them more because of sexual assaults, murder that even happens on that track, that very dangerous track. They won't talk about it. They turn down every meeting with the president. They go on vacation. He stays back. They go on junkets paid for by lobbyists to resorts in Puerto Rico. He stays back. He invites them almost daily. They stay back. The vice president meets on a weekend, wants to meet with Chuck and Nancy. They send low-ranking aides. So at what point do they have to get serious here about, okay, this will be the new normal? A permanently shut down government, at least partial shut down government.
Because Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, refused to take a step toward the president. There is one reasonable party here. It's President Trump, who said, hey, your problems with concrete, we'll move to steel slats. Hey, you want humanitarian funding? I'll put $800 million of it in there for you. He has consistently moved and compromised, not on principle, but compromised where he could, while Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer vacation, go to Puerto Rico, stayed out of the country, out of Washington, certainly. So there's one reasonable party. It's President Trump, and that is very clear.
And, you know, Sean, there's one other thing. Reading the Constitution, Article 2, Section 3, there is this sentence in the paragraph on the State of the Union, and it reads, he may, meaning the president, on extraordinary occasions convene both houses or either of them. In other words, he doesn't need Nancy Pelosi's permission to address Congress. He can call them into session himself per the U.S. Constitution.
Well, I think that can all happen. Look, I think I don't really care how the president gets the money. One thing that I do know about this president, I don't think he's caving. I don't think he's going to give in.
No.
Now, he may adopt at some point a different strategy, which was what he said, and that is a national emergency or using Pentagon funds, because this is about defending our borders and our sovereignty and our Constitution and protecting American citizens from what is a real crisis of death, especially in the drug trade. But I certainly believe that there are things worth fighting for. And yet I think the Democrats in their minds, they think this is a winning hand for them to do nothing, to not show up, to ignore invitations, to go on junkets and trips. And literally Nancy Pelosi, if she did go on this foreign trip, would have left 800,000 federal employees without their second paycheck. So she could have been negotiating the first time, refuses to. I don't think that's going to wear well over time, especially when somebody's inviting you every day and saying, you know, I'll compromise with you. Kaylee.
That's exactly right. It's not going to wear well over time because the American people, it shows it in every poll, they want compromise. There's one party who's compromised. It's President Trump. There's one party that's not shown up, and that is Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats. They have been absent. And instead of standing for well-reasoned compromise and border security, which the American people want, she has chosen to represent the fringe left of her party, the abolish ICE crowd, the open borders crowd. That is now the mainstream Democratic Party. And all you need as evidence of that is this negotiation and the extremist positioning of Nancy Pelosi.
The difference between the 2020 election and 2018 election is they can't hide like they did in 2018. They hid their agenda. They want their crumbs back. They want open borders. They want to eliminate ICE. They want endless investigation. They want to impeach the president. I warned everybody. It was so important. The president went out, campaigned for these senators, and won these close races. That's great for him in the long run politically. But this time they're going to be bragging about, like, de Blasio. We have enough wealth. We just have it in the wrong hands, and it's just the beginning of what is going to be the single most radical group of people ever to run for president in the history of the country. All right, stay there. Quick break. We'll come back. I'll get into more of the extremism of the Women's March in our News Roundup Information Overload Hour coming up. All right, wrapping things up here before we get to our News Roundup Information Overload Hour and the anti-Semitism connections and racist connections to Farrakhan of the Women's March organizers. All right, so Kaylee, how does this all end, government shutdown, border money?
I think it ends by the Democrats taking a step toward the president because they have to. The tides are shifting. I think polling is shifting. The public sentiment is shifting. Nancy Pelosi clearly overplayed her hand with the request to end the State of the Union and forego it or do it in writing. She's made a joke. She's made games of border security, and the American people are taking notice, so I think they cave.
What do you think, Jeff Lord?
Yeah, I think that's so. One of the sources of pressure on Nancy Pelosi is going to be all of her nominal supporters, all of these government workers who are going to begin to realize the president is not going to cave and that she has got to do something, and they're going to start putting the pressure on her to do something.
I don't think there's any doubt. When people start, you know, not getting their checks, maybe food stamp money starts running out, I think they're going to very quickly realize that they're going to have to sit down and at least talk and begin there. All right. Thank you both for being with us. Jeff Lord, Kayleigh McEnany. When we come back, news roundup, information overload. So how radical are the organizers of the Women's March that the Democratic Party will not denounce? We'll explain coming up next on this Friday.
For our final news roundup and information overload.
All right, news roundup, information overload. We'll get to your calls, I promise, this hour here on a Friday. Also, our Friday fun, as we have our Friday Zac Brown Band, Charlie Daniels, Big and Rich concert series. That continues. So we're watching, right before our eyes, the transformation of an American political party. And I would argue one of the reasons Nancy Pelosi can never sit down and even negotiate a deal to save lives and prevent human trafficking, drug trafficking, radical gangs, members and cartels, and build the wall to protect both Americans from the criminal element, which is not the vast majority in any way, just a small element. But the crimes are real. We've met these angel moms and dads that lost their kids because of illegal immigration. She can't have that discussion because of the radicalization of her party. I mean, we watched the publicity seeker, you know, freshman Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, what they now say is AOC, that's her handle apparently on Twitter, you know, filming herself as she storms into the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's office, demanding he reopen the government, or, you know, teaching her less than media savvy colleagues how to use Twitter, a Twitter 101 class. But she, and wanting a 70% tax rate for Americans, if Nancy Pelosi challenges this radical base in the House of Representatives, as radical as she already is, her power is literally then hanging by a thread. It's hanging by a thread now. And so it's just going to be interesting to watch, because they're going to push her so far to the left. Within 100 days, I mean, you're going to see that Nancy Pelosi can't do anything. Now, you've got, of course, the radical leftists and the Democratic Party, that are, the people that are running for president. Let's see. Everybody's running on the socialist radical agenda. And how much can we redistribute wealth and nationalize health care and free and redistribute wealth? And there's plenty of wealth in New York. It's just in the wrong hands, de Blasio. Then you've got a bigger problem emerging for the Democratic Party. We see this with Kirsten Gillibrand. She's going to be asked this question eventually, you know, going to events side by side, hanging out with a known anti-Semite by the name of Linda Sarsour. We've talked about her before, you know, a woman that praises and promotes Sharia law, ranting about the so-called Zionists in Israel, saying, you know, we've interviewed Ayan Hirsi Ali, saying that she doesn't deserve to be a woman and deserves to have her female anatomy taken away. Now, Hirsi Ali was a victim of female genital mutilation, and she's been brave enough and told her story. And when she was accused of anti-Semitism, she blamed the, quote, Jewish media. Well, now you've got tomorrow this Women's March in Washington, D.C., and, you know, Sarsour and this woman, Tamika Mallory, a few others are the founders and leaders of this organization. By the way, both avid fans of the bigot, racist, anti-Semite Louis Farrakhan.
Here the Jews don't like Farrakhan, so they call me Hitler. Well, that's a good name. Hitler was a very great man.
The satanic Jews, they control everything. everything and mostly everybody.
There were many Israelis and Zionist Jews in key roles in the 9/11 attacks. See, the Jews have control over those agencies of government. The powerful Jews are my enemy.
Farrakhan, by God's grace, has pulled the cover off of that satanic Jew. Call me an anti-Semite. Stop it. I'm anti-termite.
And that comment made just recently. Guy that once refers to Hitler as a great man. You know, the same Democratic Party that tries to compare the president to Hitler all the time. You know, but you have Mallory even calling Farrakhan the greatest of all time on Twitter. She had multiple opportunities to denounce him. And appearing on The View this week, that they refused to condemn that hate that he has been spewing for decades.
The Women's March unequivocally condemns anti-Semitism, bigotry.
To condemn Farrakhan's remarks about Jewish people.
Yes, and we have repeatedly, in statement after statement this year, which are available directly on our website for anyone to read.
I don't speak for Jewish people, but I think I'm just confused. Mm-hmm. These remarks are, yeah. I mean, it goes on death to Israel over and over again.
We did not make those remarks. We did not. You can't.
But
put
you're associating with a man
and
who
so
does
what
publicly.
What I will say to you is that I don't agree with many of Minister Farrakhan's statements.
Specifically about Jewish people.
As I said, I don't agree with many of Minister Farrakhan's statements.
You condemn them?
I don't agree with these statements. At the end of the day...
You won't condemn it.
You know, this to me is... We just have so many examples about this. Up until this week, the DNC was actually sponsoring the Women's March organized by Farrakhan's friends. And then... finally, some of this starts coming out, and they pull out of the event and cancel the partnership, but they don't even acknowledge the reason why they canceled the partnership. They won't even discuss or condemn the people that are running this Women's March. You know, and Democrats have a long history with Farrakhan. Remember, it wasn't that long ago, within the last year, all of a sudden there's, you know, Bill Clinton, former president of the United States, Democratic Party, and two seats away from him is Louis Farrakhan. Next to Al Sharpton, next to Jesse Jackson. But Farrakhan's virulent hatred, racism, anti-Semitism. Remember, for 8 years, we finally found, I always wondered, you know, Farrakhan and Barack Obama live pretty close to each other. Obama's associations in Chicago were pretty radical. You know,
Barack
started
did
his
not
political-
want to denounce me, but Hillary forced him. And he gave in and said, all right, I renounce Farrakhan. I don't want his support. I supported him anyway. And some of the followers were a little angry with me because he had dissed me. But it's not personal. What's the bigger picture? What's in the best interest of our people? The bigger picture is... that I have a picture of Barack and myself together. You never saw it because I would never put it out to give his enemies what they were looking for, to hurt him. But he told me straight up, Farrakhan, the black vote in Chicago made me win Chicago. But it was the downstate vote that made me a U.S. Senator. And I will never do anything that will cause me to lose the downstate vote. And I said to him, my brother, your reality is not mine. And we need you where you are. So I will never ask you to do anything that will cause you to lose the downstate vote. And I never have. He was the bigger picture.
Conspiring to lie about a relationship, obviously. For 8 years, America never saw those pictures. I raised the question publicly. It was a picture with Mrs. Farrakhan and Michelle Obama that we had out there. But Barack Obama hung out with the most radical people in the Chicago area. Hung out with, you know, who started his career in the homes of the unrepentant terrorists, Ayers and Dorn, of the Weather Underground. You know, went to the church of GD America for 20 years. And what's fascinating is you see this new radical socialist Democratic Party emerge here. You know, Bill Clinton can sit with Farrakhan. Obama, you know, has never been asked, what about this picture? What about these statements? Did you have these conversations? We'll just keep our friendship private. Because that's what Farrakhan's describing there. You know, why was he hanging out with a radical anti-Semite and a racist? Why was he doing that? You know, the Democrats, you know, close relationship we hear. You got a new freshman congresswoman, Omar. She's a known anti-Semite, once called Israel an apartheid state, which was only the tip of the iceberg. We played some of this last night. You know, Congresswoman Omar, you know, trashing Israel, then she's trashing and putting out allegations that out of whole cloth conspiracies, which she did this week against Lindsey Graham.
He is somehow compromised to no longer stand up for the truth to make sure that he is fighting to protect the oath that he took in serving the American people.
But that's quite a charge to make. You say you're pretty sure. Based on what evidence? What facts? That's a remarkable comment to make about a sitting U.S. senator.
The evidence really is present to us. It's being presented to us in the way that he's behaving.
Again, just based on what evidence, Congresswoman?
My tweet was just an opinion based on what I believe to be visible to me.
Just what I believe to be visible. In other words, whatever I make up. So Gillibrand and, you know, a presidential hopeful and Kamala Harris, presidential hopeful, they're just not going to the D.C. march. In the case of Gillibrand, she just decided to go to Iowa and do it there. An amazing week. We have amazing just double standard on basically every major issue that we face here. You know, Democrats, you know, see women as the key to them claiming the White House in 2020. And they largely credit the 2017 Women's March that drew between, you know, 3 and 4 million people as the spark that ignited the left's political backlash against the terror, against the president. You know, that's when they started talking about, I dream an awful lot about blowing up the White House and all the craziness out of Ashley Judd that you remember.
And let me just add here for 1 second, Sean, if I may. Sorry,
yes.
Ethan, I know you're going to play something awesome. I think this is a bunch of nonsense. I mean, this is supposed to be the party of tolerance. You know, the tolerant left, the we love everybody. We love everybody unless you're not part of the groupthink. You know, the complete conscious groupthink. It's nonsense. I was offended when I saw people like Madonna and Ashley Judd who are fed lines and lyrics so that they can get their job done. Like, you read words off paper. That's what you do. You don't think of anything. You add emotion to other things that people have written. That's it. That's all you do. And now you're going to stand up and talk about blowing up my White House that my tax dollars go to. I wish they would both go and live in Europe. Go live in Europe. Go over there. That's where you want to be. Go. Now we have a bunch of people that hate Israel, our strongest ally. They hate people that, you know, choose to live a different lifestyle, that are gay, that are lesbian. You know, this is the party, the LGBTQ community, and they don't care about them anymore. You know, and now we're appointing people that are saying horrible things about Israel to, you know, Foreign Affairs Committee and our congressional. I mean, it's insane. These women do not represent us. I'll tell you that much.
All right, we got to take a quick break. 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. And as we continue, news roundup, information overload. Listen, I'm just going to tell you something. This is now the crazy radical left. You know, the DNC is tied to it, but they won't even condemn the people that organize this. Emily's List, that helps women get elected to public office, they also, you know, they're not saying anything about it, or any of the other groups that are saying anything about it. But,
and you know what else, Sean, if I may, and I'm so sorry, it's a woman's prerogative today as we talk about the women's month. I hope you don't mind.
Apparently.
Yeah, just, you know, listen, you're a wonderful
man. Just keep interrupting me, no problem.
Giving a woman an opportunity to be heard, you know, as she talks about the women's
month. When you're on my time,
that's right,
I can reclaim it.
Thank you, Maxine. A wise word, so rare with her.
But I will say, you know, it's one of these things where we look at all of these people who say they support Linda Sarsour, or they're pro-choice. I'll tell you what, why don't we listen to Linda Sarsour and some of the things that she said about BDSM and FGM, which is female genital mutilation, which is happening to 9 and 10-year-old girls in the United States of America right now.
Well, listen, I understand, and I have friends that describe themselves as pro-choice. But look at how even that issue has become so radicalized by the Democratic Party. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo literally will not pass a budget unless a bill is designed where even in the 9th month of pregnancy, when a child is completely and totally viable, that an abortion would be legal.
Yeah, that's called murder. That's called murder, Cuomo.
Well, it's infanticide. I mean, this is the whole argument about partial birth abortion. Look, you just recently had Liam 3 years ago, but I even looked at your, what do you call them, sonograms of the baby, and it's in 3D, and you see.
And now they have 4D.
Videos
you
of
see
it. Now
everything.
4D, yeah. You see
the fetus
everything.
Feels pain. The fetus feels hunger.
That you can do this in the 8th, 9th month, to me, it is so, there's such a horrific side of this. You look at what they're doing, it's just, to me, you can't look at that. It's almost like if people had to see what they were doing at what point in a pregnancy, exactly what was happening, I think people would make sometimes an informed other choice.
Everybody should watch Phelan McAleer's film on Gosnell the movie. If you think that you're pro-choice, just watch a movie on abortion, and then we'll talk after. We got to wrap it up here, Sean.
All right, 25 till the top of the hour. What a news week this has been. James, we now know that if you look at the FBI, look what happened. James Baker under criminal investigation, the general counsel for the FBI under Comey. Andrew McCabe under criminal investigation. Then we learn, of course, the big bombshell week, and this is not what the media is feeding you, that because they have ignored the biggest abuse of power corruption scandal ever in history. Then we've got the blockbuster John Solomon report. Bruce Orr warned everybody about the Clinton bought and paid for phony Russian dossier put together by a Trump hater known as Christopher Steele. And they were all warned way in advance of using it as the bulk of information for FISA warrant applications. That is a huge week. 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. Let's go to our phones on this Friday as we say hi to Patty in Texas. Patty, hi. How are you? Glad you called.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
Good. So I want to talk about the Dems and their long list of promises that they've made but have never kept. And the first time in history we have a president who actually delivers on his promises and stands up for the American people. Where's this list of promises that they've made and that they've never kept, that the left has never kept? And how come no one is talking about it?
This is what's going to happen, though, over time. I mean, and I said this at the beginning of the year in my first monologue. I said, you know, this is why we started Hannity Watch, because and this is going to be the difference between the election of 2018 and 2020, is that Democrats hid who they were. Democrats kept saying to Maxine, just shush. Yeah, don't say it. Don't say impeachment. We're going to do it, but don't say it. And they're looking every second minute of every day for any reason. And they get giddy with excitement. They let down their base, giddy with excitement, let down their base. You know, the BuzzFeed piece is just the latest example. In 2020, and remember, they also said they wouldn't talk about borders. They wouldn't talk about their desire to eliminate ICE. You know, they kept quiet that they want to rescind the tax cuts. You know, or that they want this new green energy, America free of fossil fuel dream in 12 years, or the 70% tax rate that they want. They never discussed wanting their crumbs back. They kept it secret. The difference between 2018 and 2020 is, oh, they're going to proudly say all of this. It's going to get to the point where every presidential candidate, even Crazy Uncle Joe, is going to be dragged so far to the left that they are going to expose themselves as the radical, new, leftist, socialist, extremist party that they've become. And everything that they do, which we point out, leads to one agenda, one or the other, hating Trump and wanting redistribution. That's it. That's all they represent. And hating Trump is their the manna from heaven that they feed off of when they wake up every morning. You know, how can we hate Trump this second of the day? That's not a plan that's going to be good for America, improve our security situation, or improve the American economy and make our lives better. That's where they're going to lose it.
I agree. I just worry, you know, that people are going to fall for it.
Listen, let me tell you something. Half the country thinks it's a great idea to redistribute wealth. You know, think about this. How appealing is the message? You don't have to do anything. I'm going to take their money and I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to guarantee you and your family a free college education. I'm going to guarantee your family free daycare. I'm going to guarantee your family free health care, whether you're legal or illegal in New York City and California. But we're going to tax you to death. And there's a certain appeal. What they're doing is playing on people's natural fears. And, you know, most people have a natural worry about the future and about finances. And when you have government officials say, well, we're going to do all of this for you, you just got to elect us. Just trust us. Well,
correct.
Obamacare didn't work out well, did it? Those promises weren't kept.
No. Yeah.
But, you know, so that's going to be the battle. It is an ideological, deep philosophical difference in terms of the vision for the country. Conservatism works. Donald Trump has succeeded because he has done what past presidents like Reagan have done. The largest tax cut, eliminating the bureaucracy. He's now made, it for the first time in decades, America the largest oil producer in the world, surpassing Russia and the Saudis. You know, he now has put us on a path to be even bigger producers of energy with natural gas and coal. Once these pipelines, the, you know, Dakota Pipeline and Keystone Pipeline, once ANWR is opened up, you're going to have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of high-paying career jobs for Americans. And we'll be providing our allies the lifeblood of their economy, the energy that they need to produce goods and services every day. It's going to be a game changer in every way. All right, I know it's a long answer. I hope that helped at all.
Yes, it did. You make me feel better. Keep messaging it, and I appreciate everything you do.
And think of this last point, though, Patty. Remember, the president's keeping his promises. This fight about the border is about a promise he made. You know, he promised the tax cuts. He promised ending burdensome regulation. He promised that, you know, he was going to do very specific things, and he's accomplishing it. I don't see a downside. I think politicians that are so fearful of losing their job, I don't think there's a downside for any politician that makes a promise, runs on a promise, makes a commitment, and then fights and doesn't give up fighting for that promise. I think it's an admirable quality to me, because a lot of these politicians cave. They look at polls, they change their minds, they give in, they capitulate. You want real leaders. Real leaders are willing to take the heat for tough decisions.
Agreed. Yeah, I live near the border in Texas, and my community has definitely been affected. So we appreciate him standing strong for us.
Yeah, I mean, think of this. Imagine we stop 90% of America's heroin from coming in. Imagine we stop the 2%, not the 98% of people that are good people that want a better life that just don't want to do it legally. You know, you stop the gangs, the cartels, the human traffickers, the drug traffickers, a potential terrorist that wants to bring harm to our towns and cities. You know, you get that accomplished, America's more secure. What are the Democrats offering to secure the country? Nothing. You know, the very same thing they supported 4 years ago, they won't support it now. It speaks volumes about who they are. It's not principled. What it is political opportunism for them. And as they turn down every invitation to the White House, as they take trip after trip after trip and vacation and junkets and resorts paid for by lobbyists and whatever, the American people have seen the president sitting there in the Oval saying, come on over for lunch today. You want to have dinner tonight? And they're saying no. So it's going to be fascinating to watch. Thank you. Lee in California. Lee, hi, how are you? Glad you called.
I'm here. My family was directly affected by the illegal aliens. I have a, I guess you could say, a contract on everybody in my family from the MS-13, because my grandson had to testify against one of them. The guy got 112 years, no parole. But for the 3 years prior to the actual trial, we had threatening phone calls, cars driving by, people banging our door, middle of the night. And we've had to move. And I have moved from one end of California to the other. And I have two big pit bulls. I have motion sensor cameras. I have motion lights. My house is locked up all the time. And they technically don't know where we are now, but it's still hanging out there. And I've done everything I can do to keep from putting down a forwarding address.
Only thing I'm going to tell you, it sounds like you're doing the right thing, but there are real threats to real people all the time. My advice is always take them seriously. You know, I'm one of the older guys now in cable news, and I have counseled many people, even on other networks, when it's revealed that they're under threats. I give them the best of my advice, because being in the public eye, that sadly is part of the job at this point. Take it seriously, work with law enforcement, and don't ignore it. That's my advice to everybody. I'm sorry you're having to deal with some of that. All right, that's going to wrap things up for this Friday. As always, we thank you. We can't do this without you. We're going to have more on the Democratic Party extremism, the president versus Pelosi, which is getting really amazing. What a week it's been exposing the deep state, the latest on the shutdown, the border crisis, news you won't get anywhere else, and Sarah Sanders and much more. That's all coming up tonight. Hannity, set your DVR, 9 Eastern, Fox News. Oh, and by the way, we go to Representative Ocasio-Cortez's district, like we went to Pelosi's. That's all happening tonight exclusively, Fox News on Hannity. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.